Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. Hit that subscribe button, rate and review the podcast. What's up, PGF Nation? We are back with another great show today. Eagles get blown out again. Chiefs drop the ball. Okay, I'm sorry. I had to do it. Bears shock the Detroit Lions. Week 14 was crazy. We're going to decide where the panic meter is at for some of these teams. Talk about some others. We'll preview some big games for week 15. Make some picks on those games. Plus, of course, our betting locks of the week and a lot more. Joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Brad, you come in with all this energy, and as a Raider fan, it's a sad day for me. So, hello, PGF Nation. Thank you for listening.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think Raiders is going to make the docket. That game was that game was painful. I don't have to tell you, Raider fan or not, that game was just painful for any football fan to watch. I don't know what was going on in that game. Just absolutely brutal. But we do have a lot of big-time games to get to, a lot of great stuff to get to today, of course. Let's start with a little bit of news, though, Alex. Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert got injured on Sunday versus the Broncos. He's got a fractured right index finger. Obviously, that's going to be on his throwing hand, and he's going to be out for the remainder of the season. This is a huge blow for this Chargers team that's been really disappointing all year, but now I think it's time to wave the white flag, Alex. This has just gone completely off the rails in LA.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Brandon Staley shouldn't feel any pressure. He should realize, I'm just going to be able to play out the string without a lot of pressure of trying to make anything because I'm playing with a backup. And maybe he starts to coach a little bit more looser. Psych. I'm sure he'll even coach more like I play Madden. And perhaps Kellen Moore can start to maybe debut himself for perhaps a head coaching job or maybe looking for a new job because, as you know, once they fire a head coach, usually the whole staff goes after that. So these next 4 to 5 weeks will be very interesting for the Chargers coaching staff. Not, let's say, the players, but that coaching staff.
Even with him and as little expectation as we had with him being a head coach, it's been even worse than I think anybody could have imagined. I mean, this team has really underachieved. Justin Herbert, he had started 62 consecutive games. It was the longest active streak by a quarterback in the NFL. We've seen him play through some really tough injuries. He had that rib injury last year. He played through a hand injury earlier this year. It finally just caught up to him. That offensive line has been terrible. He was getting peppered in that Broncos game. I mean, it looked like every time I looked up in that game, he was getting smacked around by somebody on the Broncos. But I think it's going to give it, to your point, Alex, it's going to give them a chance to finally hit the reset button, get rid of this joke of a head coach, start over, clean house, and try to get a real coach around this young quarterback and start moving this team in the right direction finally. Alex, got a lot of playoff teams and potential playoff teams to talk about today. But last week, Alex, you came up with a Twitter poll question. Will Gardner Minshew and the Colts make the playoffs? Got the results. 67% said yes. 33% voted no. Are you surprised with the poll results from PGF Nation on Twitter, Alex?
No, and that's because it's what we call a trend. The Colts have actually been trending up. And so I'm not surprised at all. And I understand the pushback as well, as I'm pretty sure there were some AFC North fans that probably voted on this and want their teams in there, and probably a sprinkle of Buffalo Bills fans. So I can understand that. But I think I'm not surprised at it at all.
Yeah, we talked about last week the job Shane Steichen has done with that team, especially with a backup quarterback for a long stretch. It's really pretty impressive. This was a team that had really low expectations. The fact that they're even in the playoff mix, I think, really says a lot. Alex, let's start with the Monday Night Football doubleheader. And I got to start here, Alex. I got to give a lot of credit to the Giants and Brian Daboll, because watching this game, it was clear to me he opened up the playbook, brought in extra offensive linemen. He used some really complex motion pre-snap that we haven't really seen from them this year, gave the Packers problems on defense. Extra lineman comes in at one point in this game, Alex, and plays the H-back position, goes in motion and lead blocks for Saquon Barkley. He scores a touchdown on that play. I mean, just some really innovative, creative stuff that I saw from Daboll in this offense. Wandale Robinson came in as a wildcat at quarterback. They had some gadget plays, a flea flicker. When you don't have an overly talented team and you've got a backup quarterback, you've got to get creative. And I thought Brian Daboll and this coaching staff did a really great job of that on Monday night.
A lot of kudos goes to them as well, especially with a healthy Tyrod Taylor not going and going with the DeVito family, a.k.a. Tommy DeVito, and having him go really put this team, and I'm pretty sure a lot of fans at this point were hoping that they lose and are tanking. Ha-ha, but that's not the case. Tommy DeVito and the Giants pull it out, which is one of the reasons I love football. Unlike a lot of other sports, when a team decides to tank, those players still go out there and play their heart out and will be in a position to beat a surging team like the Packers were. And on the Packers' end of this, we have to talk about what this did for the Packers, because the Packers, had they won, would have been sitting at 7-6. They are currently, as it stands right now, still in the playoffs. And with their remaining schedule being the Bucks, Panthers, Vikings, and Bears, those are all winnable games and would have put them in position to possibly make a run. And we'll talk about Detroit later, because they seem to be on a downslide. And I'll talk about their, I won't get into their schedule now, but their schedule was not a favoring schedule for them ending the season, and it was trending up for the Packers. So this was a very pivotal game. It's going to be interesting to see what we have as they go down the stretch.
What I liked, I think, most from what I saw from this Giants team in this win was, I mentioned Saquon Barkley. He really struggled for most of this game against that Packers front seven, but he got it going in the fourth, and it's because they refused to give up on the run. And I liked seeing that from Brian Daboll. The Giants defense, I got to tip the cap. They played a really great ball game. They made Jordan Love uncomfortable. They forced a pick, multiple takeaways in this game. Rookie cornerback Deontay Banks, he was big in this game. And we talked about him, obviously, in April, coming out of the draft. He was a guy that we both circled and said this could be a late first-round pick to watch. He's starting to develop into a good young player. Kayvon Thibodeau, man, had a monster game, had a half a sack. That gives him 11 and a half on the year. He's had a great season. He made key plays all over the field, blew up a run behind the line of scrimmage, deflected a pass, forced a fumble. He also had 8 tackles. That Giants defensive line consistently beat up on the Packers up front. I thought that was a big difference in this game. But like you mentioned, Packers now 6-7. Currently the 7th seed in the NFC. This loss hurt, Alex. They had been playing some really good football going into this game. So I've got to ask you, panic meter for the Packers, 1 through 10, 1 meaning there's no need to panic at all, 10 is full-blown panic. Where are they right now?
Well, if I'm in the Packers organization, I'm at a 1, because I don't believe they came in with any expectation except to see Jordan Love and where he is and what they should be doing in the future, with the exception of us, PGF Nation, who said that the Packers would win this division. And had they won this game, we might start patting ourselves on the back a little bit harder, but I digress. But I'm at a 1 here. If I'm the coach, if I am the GM / president of the Packers, I'm sitting calm. I'm sitting comfortably. I feel confident in the maturation of Jordan Love this season. I have an understanding that when he's on the field and my running game's at full strength and I have Christian Watson finally in the fold, this guy looks like he can do some things. So now I look forward to the future and what pieces on offense and defense that I need to add to fill this out. Because next year, like we said, I believe a pod or two ago, Brad, we might have been a year ahead on the Packers. So the sky and everything is bright for the Packers going forward. So I'm at a 1 here.
Yeah, Alex, and that makes total sense. When you're looking at it from a helicopter view, I completely agree with you because I think long-term they're in great shape. I love these young playmakers. I love these young wide receivers. I really like the progress I've seen from Jordan Love. He had some moments in this game where he didn't look great, but overall, especially the second half of the season, he's really come along. Maybe as far as the individual season in this exact moment, you might say the panic meter is a little higher after this because I think it does hurt their playoff chances a little bit. But big picture, I'm with you. I don't think there's any reason to panic. I think you've got to be excited from what you've seen from them this year. Let's jump to the other Monday Night Football game. Dolphins. They led the Titans, Alex, 27-13 with 4 minutes and 34 seconds remaining and found a way to lose this game 28-27. Incredible comeback by Tennessee. The type of comeback that even in the NFL, you just do not see 14-point comebacks with under 5 minutes very often, especially considering that the Titans really gifted Miami 21 points in this game, 2 unforced fumbles deep in their own territory, a pick 6 by Levis. The Titans scored 2 touchdowns in the final 2:40. This is a major hit to the Dolphins' chances of getting the number one seed in the AFC. A lot to dive into with this game, Alex. Will Levis, I was pretty impressed with him in this game. He had some rookie moments, but those late throws, those 2 big touchdown drives late in that game, he came up big in this spot. I was pretty impressed. And that Titans defense, they really just got physical with this Miami team, especially up front and without their best defensive tackle, one of the best in the game, found a way to grind it out, turn this into a fist fight, and got a win.
If we want to just be honest here in terms of Will Levis, let's just talk. I'll start on the Tennessee side here. In terms of Will Levis, we were pretty much down. Well, rather, I was down a lot on Will Levis. I didn't think he – well, I knew he wasn't going to be a first-round pick because of his poor showing at the combine and coming with the fanfare of what his arm was, and it was not on display during the combine. And then I was down on him on what I saw on actual tape. However, he has shown improved because this is really not a good team. I give a lot of credit here to Mike Vrabel and the way he's been able to keep this team engaged. And again, I'll say it again, Tannehill is on his last year, Derrick Henry is on his last year, and so is Mike Vrabel. Yet he's dialed in. These players are playing their hearts out for him. And oh, by the way, D-Hop is still that guy. Okay, because he was out there making catches all over the place. Will Levis was putting it up, giving his guy a chance, and D-Hop did not disappoint by pulling, I believe that was a one-hander, on a 45-yard bomb that he threw down to him. So there's a lot going on there, and I thank D. Henry because you helped me pull out some things in fantasy. You had been lacking on me, but this game you came through it with at least 2 touchdowns, so that helped a lot. On to the Miami Dolphins. I mean, okay, we know that Tyreek Hill was gone for a part of the game, so that's understandable. And this is the part where if you don't have that guy who kind of really sets the table for everything else that you do on things that you need to do, they were kind of off. And they really lacked some guy named Mike Gesicki, because they sure could have used a tight end in a situation like this where they weren't able to use Tyreek Hill's speed to kind of offset and do a lot of other things that they normally do. And then on top of that, Devon Achain, who I had on my fantasy team, you didn't deliver either, sir. But I do appreciate the coach in putting Achain. He did give him a few Tyreek Hill routes, because if you didn't notice, and I'm pretty sure you saw it, Brad, he did put Devin out there in some situations and running some Tyreek Hill routes to utilize his speed. One of them, too, just missed him on a bomb. By the way, that would have helped me win a game, but he wasn't able to connect. So Miami, on the Miami side, this was a game that they should have had. And actually, I know a lot of people had some prop bets on here, so a lot of people lost some money on this game from a betting standpoint. I still feel good about them making the playoffs, and not that Buffalo's going to go on some type of run and overtake them. But this was a bad loss, especially being the fact that they were at home and they have yet to beat a winning team, a team with a winning record. So this was a game that was expected of them to win, and they didn't. And now as we get into these winter months and they're going to have to go on the road and do some things, it's going to get interesting coming down to the wire with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, this is a disappointing loss. I mean, there's no way around it. That Titans defense, man, where did that come from? I mean, they played their best game of the year, held Miami to 4 of 13 on third down. They put pressure on Tua, what felt like every time he dropped back. They moved him off his spot. They forced him to play off schedule, and that's not his game. He is a rhythm and timing quarterback. Once he's forced to move around, he's just not the same player. And this game, to me, Alex, really proved why Tyreek Hill is the real MVP for Miami and not Tua. Look, Tua's just not the same guy when he does not have Tyreek Hill out there. This offense is clearly not the same when they don't have him out there. So I want to put all that MVP discussion stuff away. I know there's been a lot of people trying to say Tua should be in the MVP mix. Not for a second. When you're not even the best player on your own team, you cannot be in the MVP race. Tyreek Hill, we just see how important he is. Alex, you mentioned Will Levis on the other side, though. I really like what I've seen from Levis since he took over as the starter. Still has some rookie moments, of course. The pick six was ugly, and he'll make some errant throws from time to time. But this is a guy that we knew coming out of the draft, he has those physical tools that you just can't teach. The other thing about him that I liked, and I know you saw it, and it's been going viral, I love the fire and the passion he plays with, man. This guy was fired up on the sideline. You can tell that he cares about the game. He cares about winning. One hell of a comeback by the Titans. And your point about the Dolphins, I'm starting to feel like they're very similar to the Dallas Cowboys for me this year. Very talented team, but they tend to come up light in big spots. Each team played a physical football team this week, and Dallas finally stepped up and beat the Eagles. Granted, the Titans aren't as talented as the Eagles, but a physical team and the type of team that the Dolphins have struggled with, and they came up light again.
You know, Brad, you know, one more thing, and this could be a great Twitter poll question, and I'll say this just for Madden players out there. I was so impressed with Will Levis. I just started a new season with the Titans, and I'm going to see what I can do with them, and I'll keep you guys updated as we go on throughout the rest of the season. But the Twitter poll question that I do, and I'm actually not joking. I really did. I started it today, and it's actually on pause on my screen right now. But the Twitter poll question that I have, and I said earlier, Mike Vrabel is in his last year. Given how competitive that the Titans are, given how this team and players respond to this coach, should the Titans extend Mike Vrabel and keep him on as a coach going into the future?
Ooh, I like it. I like it, Alex. That one is going to be up on Twitter momentarily. So, guys, after you listen to the episode, like always, at PGF Podcast on Twitter, hit us up with your thoughts on what you think about Vrabel, if they should bring him back next year in Tennessee. I like that question, Alex. I got a question for you, though, after this game. Big loss for Miami in this one. Panic meter for Miami after this loss, Alex. Where is it at for you?
I have my panic meter is at a six, going teetering a 6.5. Let me tell you why. Their next four games are the Jets, home to the Jets, home for the Cowboys, at Baltimore, and then Buffalo. That four-game stretch. Now, people can say what they want to say about the Jets, but that is an in-division rivalry, and the Jets are coming off a huge win, so they're going down to Miami with confidence. Then you're going to be facing the Cowboys, who are still going to be on the lookout now that they're tied, and we'll talk about that game later. Now that they're tied at the top of the division, they're tied. They'll be looking to move forward as well. At Baltimore, trying to sew up home field advantage, and then you're going to have Buffalo, and who knows where Buffalo will be. They'll either be trying to, maybe they'll come down to maybe that last game trying to get them in, or they'll be trying to play spoilers in some way, shape, or form for seeding for Miami. These next four games can really determine whether the Dolphins are either in or out, given that the Bills are still hanging around. We'll talk about that later as well. And then also, what type of seeding will they have? Because the last thing you want to do as Miami is have to travel to Baltimore in January, have to travel, or maybe even have to travel to Kansas City in January. Those cold winter months in January, when those are two places where the wind's going to be whipping and Tua does not have the greatest arm, and it goes against what they do well.
Eagles get crushed again, back-to-back weeks, this time by the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys scored on each of their first four drives in this game. The offense was clicking. They were impressive. They went to halftime 24-6 in this game. It was never in doubt. I think this was by far the most impressive win for the Cowboys this year, that Dallas defense didn't give up a touchdown in this game, Alex. Every time the Eagles offense started moving the ball, the Cowboys created a turnover. Fumbles by Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. And look, Jalen Hurts' ball security has been a major issue this year. We've talked about it on earlier episodes. We know he hasn't been 100% this year, playing through some injuries, and that's probably why they aren't using him as a runner more in this offense. But he's not the same player when he's not running the ball consistently. This offense isn't the same. They rely way too much on him just chucking it up to these two great playmakers on the outside. They can't stop the run. They can't run the ball, and their defense has been shredded back-to-back weeks versus two teams that they're more than likely going to have to face in the NFC playoffs. This is a team that in 2 weeks, Alex, went from the best record in the NFL, the number one seed in the NFC, to a wild card team if the playoffs started today. Alex, give me your thoughts on this game and in this big, big win by the Cowboys.
Well, I want to give a shout out to a space that me and Brad share a lot, and a lot of Cowboy fans. They thought that they would win, and even some of the Philly fans thought they would win. But the Cowboys fans literally said weeks before this game happened, after they lost to the Cowboys in that close game, they said that they would blow the doors off the Eagles coming when they come to Dallas. And kudos to them; they were absolutely right. But when we're looking at the game, I mean, Dak has been on fire, and we need to start talking about him in the MVP race. I know odds have now flipped a lot, and I've seen Dak Prescott at the top of that, but he 1,000% deserves to be in the MVP race. More on that in a moment. The running game. It's not Tony Pollard. It's the use of Rico Dowdle, if I'm saying his name correctly. They ran 32 times for 138 yards, and this was a key component that I said the Cowboys needed and why I did not like Tony Pollard as a lead back, because he is not the bruiser or anything of the type that they had in Zeke with that 1-2 punch that they had. With this type of running game, it looks like they can slow the game down, they can do a lot more with play action, and then you saw CeeDee Lamb get involved a lot. There was a nice throw to Brandon Cooks, one that he probably should have had a PI on that he didn't turn on, and then a nice throw to Michael Gallup as well. And then Jake Ferguson is starting to really come along as probably a top five tight end in this league, the way that he's been used this season. So the Cowboys were hitting on all cylinders. Now let's take a look at what we're looking at with the Philadelphia Eagles. You're absolutely right about Jalen Hurts in the run game. And it was a big piece of why I was worried about losing Miles Sanders. Even though I know he's not the greatest running back, I thought he worked within the offense that they had, because this run game does not look anything like it used to look. Boston Scott used to always be good for coming in late and getting a touchdown and hurting a bunch of fantasy owners. Kenneth Gainwell is not looking like he looked last year. And DeAndre Swift started out strong. I think he had a string of maybe 4 to 5 games where he looked good, but now it's kind of slowly dwindled down, and he's not having the output. And the fumbles by A.J. Brown, I mean, I'm just going to chalk that up as an anomaly. That's not something, and Devontae Smith as well, that's not something that they normally would do. So I'm not going to really harp on that. Something that we spoke about before, that back end of the Philadelphia Eagles defense is really puzzling to me, because Bradberry, Slay, and then the addition of Byard, I thought the addition of Byard would help clean some things up, but it does not seem to be helping a lot, because Jake Ferguson, which is something that Byard would probably have a lot of coverage on as the safety, he 5 for 72. CeeDee Lamb, I know they move him all over the place, 6 for 71 and a touch. We saw a couple of weeks ago what they did with what San Francisco did to them. So that back end, though we thought it was a great move bringing in Kenny Byard, it's not clicking in that back end. Maybe we want to talk about the defensive coordinator, because there is something to say when you lose not one but both coordinators, offensive and defense. So there's some things going on in Philly, and that's okay. Those are things that happen when you have a hot team. I just want to circle back really quick to Dak Prescott. I think he deserves a lot of MVP consideration, and I want to throw Mike McCarthy's name into the hat for Coach of the Year. When he was hired in Dallas, in the first iteration, there was a lot of pushback and talking about how he said he's been locked in the basement and he wasn't telling the truth, looking at tape and trying to use analytics and things like that. But kudos to Jerry Jones and his son and their brain trust there in Dallas for sticking with this. And now they're reaping the benefits because you let go of Kellen Moore, you retain Dan Quinn. Now the offense, Dak Prescott is playing a lot smoother. That offense is moving a lot more. And that offense is moving without the strong running game that Dak is accustomed to having. They rebuilt the offensive line. There's always been a lot to say about Jerry Jones, but this is what I talk about when you are the CEO and being able to pivot off of a business plan that may have been working in the beginning, but it's not working now, and pivot to make things better and move off of the rigidness and start looking into the future and trusting the people around you. Because when you start talking about what they had with Deron Bland, you get a Tony Pollard, you get a Tyler Smith, you find a Jake Ferguson, all these guys that you found in those late rounds that have been able to step in and do a lot of things. Jerry Jones, the Cowboy Brain Trust, Mike McCarthy, and Dak Prescott deserve a lot of credit for what the Cowboys are doing this season.
You're absolutely right about McCarthy. I'm glad you brought him up because you're right. He's gotten a lot of heat from a lot of people, myself included. I've pointed the finger at myself here on some prior episodes, especially last season. I had some real question marks about McCarthy and if he was the right guy in Dallas. One thing is for sure, there was not all Dallas Cowboy fans, but I know there was a decent percentage of Cowboy fans that were not happy with the job that Kellen Moore was doing with this offense. We see them move off of Kellen Moore. Mike McCarthy takes over the play calling, installs more of a West Coast system, and Dak is playing the best football of his career. Kellen Moore goes to the Chargers, and Herbert is playing the worst year of his career. Coincidence? I don't know. Maybe that group of Cowboys fans that were throwing mud at Kellen Moore, maybe they had something there. Maybe they were right, because we have seen a dramatic shift with these two teams and that one single move and how it's affected these two quarterbacks. This was a big win for them, especially against a good division rival. But I want to talk about the Eagles here for a sec, because losing to the 49ers, losing to the Cowboys, I don't think that is necessarily alarming. These are two of the best teams in the conference. I think what's more alarming is the fashion in which it happened. Consecutive blowout losses where they really weren't even competitive in these games. I think that raises bigger questions about the Eagles than just the losses themselves. Where's the panic meter at for you with the Philadelphia Eagles right now?
My panic button is at a 5. Not because I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. It's just because I'm not sure if there's anything else they can do here to do anything with that back end. I thought they would have done this a little bit earlier. I don't know why they didn't bring back Sue. And I won't necessarily say anything about Linval Joseph, but I don't know why they didn't bring back Sue to just give a little bit more oomph to that defensive line as well, because that's part of what was really good for them and probably helped them out a lot on the back end. And we might be seeing things on the back end that we didn't see last year simply because they don't have that heavy rotation. But I will say one thing, and a friend of ours, Brad, said this. They face Seattle Giants, Arizona Giants. One of these Giant games, our friend might be right, Brad. They may lose one of these Giant games, and that may be the difference maker. And Giant fans will love to hear this. That may be the difference in them winning the division and i.e. also being able to get home field advantage throughout. So one of those Giant games may be a determining factor on where they are seated going into the playoffs.
Yeah, quick side note, because we talked about the Giants earlier and I forgot to mention it. That team is back in the playoff mix. Pretty unbelievable. I'm not sure they get in, but just unbelievable the turnaround we've seen from that team, especially with backup quarterbacks for the majority of the year now. Just incredible what they're doing. But Alex, I'm going to dial the panic meter up a little higher for the Eagles. I think 5 might be a little low. I think right now the panic meter is a lot closer to 7 or 8 for me. Only because of this. Are they still a good team? Yes. Are they still going to be in the playoffs? Obviously. Can they still make some noise? Probably. But let's face it, that wasn't the expectation for this team. The expectation for this team is a Super Bowl, and at the very least, a Super Bowl appearance. And I think right now, getting smashed by the two best teams in your conference has that panic meter dialed up a little higher for me, because I think that tells you that this team is clearly not on the level of the 49ers or the Cowboys right now. And that has to be pretty alarming going into the playoffs, thinking, okay, how are we going to get past these teams? I'm not saying they can't, but I like your point about this late in the year. How much can you really change at this point? How much can you really do to get you over the hump of these two teams? Because if those games were close, this would be a different conversation, but they weren't. These were absolute blowouts. So if I'm going to grab that meter and I'm going to dial it up a little higher, Alex, because I think it's time to worry in Philly. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pintglass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. 49ers, blowout Seattle again. Alex, the Seahawks, it's clear to me at this point, they just have no answers for this Niners team. And look, I don't know if anybody does at this point. I mean, they're just playing that good of football, but they just have really struggled to beat this team or really even stay competitive with this team. McCaffrey, Ayuk, Debo, Kittle, they all had a catch or a run longer than 44 yards in this game. Explosive play after explosive play. The Niners had 8 plays of 25 yards or more in this game. The Niners actually played maybe their worst game in weeks, which is hard to believe, and they still routed Seattle. Now, it just shows me how dangerous this team is when they're healthy. That Niners defense was making plays too. 4 sacks, 5 quarterback hits, 2 picks. This might be the nail in the coffin for Seattle. It might be time to start waving the white flag for this team. After starting the season 6-3, they've lost 4 straight. They're 1-4 versus the NFC West. They don't have a quality win since week 2. I think the injuries have really hurt this team. Geno being out, they lost Devin Witherspoon in this game as well. The frustration for the Seahawks and where this season has gone, I think, has really boiled over. We saw it with DK Metcalf in this game. The defense is going backwards. I mean, they gave up 500-plus yards in this game. Your thoughts on this game and just another big win for the 49ers?
Thought number one, leave DK Metcalf the F alone. That's my number one thought. Leave this man alone. I don't know. He literally lifted, I believe it was Dre Greenlaw. He's not playing with you. Leave that man alone when he gets in a bad mood. That's the first thought. Now, for the rest of the game, you know what? Great on script opening drive, opening offensive set by the Seahawks and Drew Lock. But once they were off script, everything became unraveled. And we saw that, you know, I get Drew Lock has some talent, you know, the pride of Mizzou and however you want to feel about it. But he's a career backup. He's going to make, you know, maybe $25 million or maybe even more as a backup for the next 10 to 15 years. So he solidified himself as that. The Seahawks as a whole, you're absolutely right. Actually, this was my pick to win the division. I actually had to pay off a few bets because I did sign off on that. I was sold on that, and they have let me down. However, if I'm the Seahawks, I'm literally, my panic meter for them as an organization is 0. You know why? Because I'm set at every single position with the exception of quarterback. I set my offensive line. I set my defensive backs. I set my linebackers. I set my defensive line by making a trade in a few draft picks. I'm set at running back. I just need to figure out this quarterback situation. And this is one of the best quarterback drafts in terms of potential coming out. Anybody I get could possibly be a guy simply because I'm set everywhere. Now, 49ers, still rolling, still look strong. Christian McCaffrey, loved everything about you, except I don't know why you didn't score when I needed you to score on that 72-yard opening run. You did kill a ticket of a friend of mine's because I told them to take you an anytime touchdown, and you didn't deliver, but I digress. Deebo Samuel showing up as a wide receiver, definitely still a athlete, quote unquote, in terms of how I look, but he did 7 catches for 149 and a touch. Brock Purdy, another solid game, 368, 2 TDs and an interception. But the 49ers looked how we thought they would look. They look like a team that's headed towards the Super Bowl. I think only thing we can wait now for the 49ers is just wait and see how they fare once they get to the playoffs, because that's been where, whether it have been injury or whether just in terms of the last few years, even though Garoppolo may have been the starting quarterback, but that's where they have faltered is when they have gotten to the playoffs. They just haven't been able to get over that proverbial hump that would get them to the Super Bowl, because this is a Super Bowl roster. The next 4 games, Arizona, Baltimore, Washington, and the Rams. They get Baltimore at home. Going to be interesting because Baltimore's going to be playing for home field advantage, so that's going to be an interesting game. The Rams have been an exciting team. We'll talk about them later, but, you know, that team has been very competitive. That's going to be a hard game for them to win. So they look like they're ready. I think only thing I think about when it comes to the 49ers is how will they fare when they get into the playoffs and the health of those players.
Alex, the Bills keep their season alive with the win over Kansas City. Look, everyone is going to say if the Bills make the playoffs, this is the team that you don't want to play. I don't buy it. Look, Josh Allen, we know how incredible this guy is at times, but they just need him to be Superman every week. And this team and this coaching staff, too many flaws. They're in this position for a reason. They're fighting and scratching to try to get in the playoffs for a reason. Look, this is a big win. Like I said, it keeps them alive. No doubt about it, but I still don't have a whole lot of faith that this Bills team, if they sneak into the playoffs, can really make any real noise. Now, Kansas City really have struggled to pull away from teams that they should beat all season long. I mean, every game this year has been within one score in the fourth quarter, except for the Bears game. The offensive line takes way too many penalties. Isaiah Pacheco being out, I think, really hurt this offense. I mentioned it last week. Kelce is starting to slow down, even though he's still really good. But this team, they don't have a legit number one wide receiver. The drops are a real issue. I know it's getting talked about a lot. Every broadcast out there is talking about it, but it has killed this team. They have dropped 8% of Mahomes' passes this season. That's the worst drop rate by any group of wide receivers over the last 10 years in the NFL. It's alarming how bad it's been. Now, Sky Moore just has not become the player that we expected going into the year. Rashee Rice, I like what I've seen from him. I think he has maybe the potential to turn into a number one receiver, but he still isn't there yet. He fumbled for the third time this year. This is what I want to get to, Alex, because this is kind of bigger picture here. When you look at the playmakers for this Chiefs offense, if you look at the Chiefs first round pick in 2021, they took Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The next three picks off the board were T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, and DeAndre Swift. They took Sky Moore in 2022 when the next player off the board was Trey McBride. In 2019, they drafted Mecole Hardman in the second round ahead of DK Metcalf and Deontay Johnson. They have flat missed on multiple drafts when it comes to the offense and being able to replenish the weapons around Mahomes, and it's really starting to show.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, but I'll get to that part in a moment. But let's talk about I'll talk about the Bills first. Number one, I'm not sure what they're going to do with the head coach, but we know for a fact they need to bring in an offensive guy that helps Josh Allen begin to see the entire field. There's no way that you went and you got the top tight end. You have a solid tight end in Dawson Knox. You have James Cook, who's a receiver out the back end, and you have Stephon Diggs, and you can't get everybody the ball. Do something to scheme these guys open onto. So the Bills, by the skin of their teeth, are still, you know, on life support with their playoff hopes. Now, Kansas City, still firmly in position of the division, but they are now losing hold of being able to maybe recover and catch the Baltimore Ravens for a home field advantage. Obviously, there's four more weeks, so anything can happen. But you're absolutely right with what they have in the running game and what they have at receiver. Travis Kelce, though still a top end, top three, one, two, or three, wherever you want to put him, on the top end of tight ends. But having to carry the entire load the way he used to for this team is not what he set up for. He needed a lot more help. Rashee Rice, a guy that we talked about, that we talked about coming into the draft, he is looking, I would say, in 2 years, we're looking at a perennial 1,000-yard possible all-pro type receiver, but right now he's still learning his way, which is why he was a second round pick. He needs to get a little bit seasoned, and then we'll start to see him take off. But I will say this, the Kansas City offensive line, they're not blocking. Obviously, you had Orlando Brown, you had Wiley as the other tackle last year. Now you have two new tackles in Juwan Taylor and Donovan Smith. Donovan Smith, thankfully, he's holding up from a health standpoint, but he's not the dominant blocker that Orlando Brown was in at least one department. Orlando Brown is a road grader, and he's just solid as a pass protector, but he's a road grader in the running game. I think this is an offensive line issue. Patrick Mahomes still has whatever he has to deal with. I'm not absolving him of anything, but I'm looking at that offensive line, and I'm trying to see what are the particular things that are going on there. And the drops, absolutely. But Kansas City is going to make a move this year. This offseason, I don't know what that specific move will be, but I can tell you two things. One thing for sure, Marquez Valdez Scantling will not be on this team next year. He has been a bust of a free agent signing. I understood why they signed him. They wanted his speed to kind of make up for what they lost in Tyreek Hill. But however, even when he's had the opportunities, he has yet to deliver. So he's a bust. He has to go. Sky Moore, he was looked at as a breakout player. He has been underperforming so much that they went and traded to get Mecole Hardman back. And then you already talked about the draft picks and how they haven't panned out.
Yeah, to your point, Alex, I think that they are going to be aggressive this offseason. It's either going to be a trade or more than likely, I think they'll lean into the draft because this is a really deep wide receiver draft. I think they'll address that position early in the draft. The offensive line 100% has been an issue, especially at the tackle spots. So I agree with you there, and that could be a spot that they address. We got to talk about one thing, though, here before we move on. I want to talk about the Kadarius Toney penalty for a second. Because everyone's talking about it. I get why Mahomes was so upset because it's a call that you don't usually see. And it really cost them the game, obviously, in a huge spot. But here's the bottom line. Toney never checked with the ref to see if he was lined up right in the pre-snap. And that's something that you learn in what, grade school football? I mean, middle school at the latest? I mean, that is just stuff that every wide receiver knows to do. We see it in every level of football. Every time you turn on the tape, that's just something you have to do. And look, if this was a close call, if it was maybe debatable if he was offsides, I would understand the outrage. But this was way offsides. I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, when you look at the sideline shot, you can't even see the center snapping the ball. I mean, he's literally that far out in front. Just a really bad mental mistake from a guy who's been a big letdown for them.
So, Brad, you know, I sent you some tape, and it's hard to tell. We were going back and forth. I know we were talking about it. Like, what did we actually see? Because it happened so fast. There's a sideline view out there on Twitter. I'm pretty sure anybody can just put it in the Twitter search, and you'll be able to find it. Of him, it appears that he pointed towards the ref and then turned back, but it happened in such one motion. And does, I don't even know if he could, even if the ref said you're not, that he would have even known, because he just said it and did it and then flashed, and then that was hike, and then all hell broke loose because he ended up scoring. So what a wild end to a game. You know, we did see Patrick Mahomes literally lose it on the refs and things like that. I know he's since apologized, but you know what? Maybe that's the passion that this team needed to see as they surge going forward.
Now Denver is one game back in the AFC West. Just crazy when you think about the start they had this year. So, Alex, panic meter for Kansas City.
I'm going to put their panic meter at 9. And here's the reason why. Not because they're a bad team or they've been looking. It's because Patrick Mahomes has never played a road playoff game. He's always been at home. So this may be the year we find out a lot about the Kansas City Chiefs and a lot more about Patrick Mahomes if he has to go on the road. So I'll put that at 9 because I think they would feel a lot more confident as any team would at home. But since this quarterback in his generation, in his era, has never played a road playoff game, this could get interesting when they have to go on the road.
Lions lose to the Chicago Bears. They've lost 2 of their last 3. They're trending in the wrong direction. They haven't looked great since their week 9 bye. I don't really like where this team is headed right now here, Alex. They have reverted back on defense in the second half of this year. We started seeing some progress from that side of the ball, but I know some of it is due to injuries, and I get that, but they cannot rush the passer outside of Aiden Hutchinson, who's had a really good year too. They just can't get after quarterbacks. They've been blitzing like crazy, one of the highest blitz rates in the entire NFL, trying to generate a pass rush, but it's leaving them exposed in the second level, and this secondary just isn't good enough to hold up when other quarterbacks have time to throw. I've got real concerns with the Lions here, Alex. Goff and this team, they look pretty good on turf. This is a team, I think, that's built to play inside. I don't know if they're built to play winter football outside. This has been an issue for Goff since his days going back to college when he was playing at Cal. I remember, Alex, he played a cold, nasty, rainy game at Oregon, and he had, I don't remember the exact number, but I'm not kidding. I think he had like 6 fumbles in that game versus the Ducks. I mean, it was terrible. In that memory, that game at Cal versus Oregon in the rain, in the cold, it really stood out to me at the time because I remember thinking, boy, this guy is struggling in bad weather, and it kind of made me curious to think about his future, and nothing's really changed. I mean, he's never been a guy who plays well in cold, nasty conditions. And I think it's really kind of holding this team back in a lot of ways. Now, look, the Bears, it's a nice win. It's a nice win for this team. Their defense is playing better since they traded for Sweat. Justin Fields played some of his best football of the year. He made some really nice throws, some really nice plays. But here's the thing. I still think this team is going to move him, probably try to get a mid-round pick, maybe a second or third-round pick for him. Someone is going to take a flyer on Justin Fields. Look, he's shown enough talent. Someone is going to take this guy and try to build a team around him and try to do something with him. It's not over for him as a starter, but I do think it's over for him as a starter in Chicago. I think they're going to take Caleb Williams. I think they're going to hire a new coach and move on. But this was another big loss for Detroit. And like I said, starting to trend in the wrong direction here, especially in the last few weeks. Alex, what's the panic meter for the Lions right now?
Panic meter, I'm putting it at a 10. I never believed in this team. I thought they should have never taken the player that they did in terms of Jahmyr Gibbs. I thought they should have really looked at working out on that back end. The one quick thing that I'll say is Jared Goff throwing 35 times a game in a close game that was coming out of halftime. When you have Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, they should be running the ball more and limiting his attempts more to 25 to 30, not 35 or more.
Ravens hang on to beat the Rams in overtime. Man, this was a heck of a game. I mean, this was a wild game, a wild finish, really entertaining back and forth game. But I want to start by giving some credit to Sean McVay, because this team is young. They're dealing with a lot of key guys that are injured. I mean, a lot of guys that just aren't healthy. Stafford, Cooper Kupp, the offensive line. I mean, they go into Baltimore, fly cross country, probably should have won that game. Great game plan by Sean McVay, because we know Baltimore is the more talented team, and McVay had some clock issues, which, you know, I'm not going to kill him for that. That happens. But I think overall, big picture here, he was pretty impressive in this game. This guy can still really call a ball game and really come up with a game plan. Going into a year where we thought the Rams could be potentially picking number one overall in April, right now they look like a playoff team. I mean, they look like a team that could maybe slip into the tournament. Just really can't say enough about the job he's done with this team. Now, we've talked about the growth that we've seen from Lamar Jackson. I think it was on full display in this game. There were multiple times where he was getting to his third and fourth read. Now, he can always run. We know that. We know how talented he is with his legs. But his maturity in the pocket, Alex, willing to wait for plays to develop, when we know early in his career, those were spots where after his first, maybe second read, he was quick to take off and try to pick up yards. I just don't see that from him anymore. The patience, the maturity, the level of quarterback play. Forget the MVP season, because I'll say it once and I'll say it again. He has never played the position better than he has this season. This team is in position to maybe be the number one seed in the AFC. I think they have a team that could win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know, nothing too much to say about the Rams. He looked really well. There were a lot of plays that he made that when it looks like they were falling and failing, he made some big plays. So a big shout out to Lamar. And again, like you said, shout out to Sean McVay. And you know what? Shout out to, I believe it's Les Snead, who's the GM of the Rams. And a lot of those fourth and fifth round picks are really, truly coming through for this team, because we know they gave a lot away at the top end. So they've been drafting a lot in the later rounds. And that's really where a GM makes his money, is what they do in the fourth and fifth rounds. Hey, Brad, before we move on from the games, I just have to say one thing to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I won't say nation because there's only one nation. It's the Raider Nation. But the Pittsburgh Steelers fans and the organization, it is time to stop thinking you're smarter than everybody else. Go and get a quarterback, a real one. Stop skating by with these below average QBs and thinking that you can just bring anybody in there because of your culture and it'll automatically work. It's not with the quarterback position. Any place else? Possibly, yeah. Quarterback position, no. Please do yourselves and your fans a favor. Go and get that guy. If it's Kirk Cousins, I don't care who it is. Whoever's available, go and get them. Kenny Pickett is not it, and neither is Mitch Trubisky. Stop wasting a Super Bowl roster and a Super Bowl coach because you want to be smarter than everybody else and not spend the money. Go get your guy.
Alex, let's wrap up NFL Week 14 with the game ball. Who's going to get your game ball this week?
My guy, a guy that they called off of the couch, a guy that we said that the Jets should have gone and got, Joe Flacco. Beating the Jacksonville Jaguars, although Trevor Lawrence looks a little iffy and maybe we don't know if he's going to play next game. But Joe Flacco, 26 for 45, 311 yards and three TDs and an interception. But, I mean, he had David Njoku out there looking like the guy we thought he was going to be coming out of Miami. Amari Cooper making plays, Elijah Moore making plays, and that defense doing what that defense does, turning the ball over. But Joe Flacco, you get my game ball for the week. You highly deserved it. You should have been perhaps in the New York Jet uniform, but you're not. But this team, losing Nick Chubb, having to play P.J. Walker, Deshaun Watson, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and they are still right now sitting at 8-5 in the playoffs and 6-1 at home. Game ball to Joe Flacco, and a lot of kudos goes to that Cleveland Brown coaching staff and organization for getting those players ready to play.
It's a great pick, Alex. I love it. I'm going to go with a guy that I don't think has gotten a game ball for me this year, 49ers wide receiver Deebo Samuel. I mean, I could have just as easily given the game ball to Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, or Brock Purdy, but I'm going to go with Deebo here because he is playing out of his mind in recent weeks. 7 catches, 149 yards, 21.3 yards per catch, explosive, big plays down the field, and a touchdown on 9 targets. Big time game from him. Oh, and he also had a rushing touchdown as well. Another monster game for Deebo Samuel. Alex, every week there is a player, a ref, a coach, somebody in the NFL or college football that makes us say WTF.
Oh, fuck.
This week, it's no different. Who's the WTF moment of the week for you, Alex?
Listen, I was texting Brad back and forth, I think, all Sunday long, where I was getting very irritated with a lot of you coaches. I can't even pinpoint whether it was the Bears, whether it was the Bucks. These 4th-and-1 calls are some of the most annoying calls that you all make. Not going for it. But when you go for it on 4th-and-1, I'm expecting you to have a specific play. Some of you are in shotgun and running out of shotgun. You're not tricking anybody with that. That doesn't make sense. It's 4th-and-1. Line up and play big ball football. Learn to do the tush push or whatever it is before it gets outlawed. But these rinky-dink, bad play calling, bad design plays on critical plays when you're going for it on 4th-and-1, you all are no better than a coach that we've been talking about all season than Brandon Staley. I can put you all in the same boat. Line up and play big boy football. Go jumbo package. Bring in those extra linemen that can be claimed as eligible. Put them on the line and go forward or get creative because you are wasting your team's time. You're wasting that my time and you're wasting the opportunity to continue a drive by with these terrible 4th-and-1 plays. Figure it out. Practice them and have them ready to go because I'm disgusted. This is, I think, what Brad, maybe the 2nd week in a row we've talked about, or 2nd or 3rd week in a row that we've talked about bad 4th-and-1 calls and running out of shotgun or having bad shotgun call plays because you're not designing plays to simply get 1 yard, to basically get 3 feet in a yard. I'm a size 12. That's 3 of my feet in front of each other. You all should be able to get this and you're making it harder than it really is.
Man, it's such a good point, Alex. You're right. It just makes you want to pull your hair out when you see some of these play calls in 4th-and-short. Stop getting cute. Stop trying to recreate the wheel here. Look, the Eagles, they run the same play every time, and they do it for a reason because it's simple and it works. Line up, like you said, in a jumbo package. Bring in some extra tight ends. I don't care. Bring in some extra offensive linemen. If you want to get creative, put an offensive lineman in as the fullback. Just run the damn ball. I mean, seriously, it's a yard. Show some toughness and go get a yard. Stop trying to get creative and stop trying to be cute. It's a great point, Alex. I've got one here, Alex. This one is going to be pointed at the refs because that Ravens game and that the Ravens Rams game that we talked about, Ravens knock off the Rams 37-31. It was an overtime game. It was a thriller, a great game. And they won this game with a walk-off 76-yard punt return touchdown by Tylan Wallace. Incredible play in a huge moment. The only problem here is the refs totally missed an absolutely blatant block in the back on a Rams defender, that a guy that was in great position to make a tackle on the play, and it happened right in front of the sideline official. Now, look, it was an exciting play, and it was a hell of a way to win a game, but WTF NFL refs. Else, let's take a look at week 15 in the NFL, some exciting matchups. I want to start Bills, Cowboys. Right now, the Bills are a 2.5-point favorite at home. What are you looking for in this matchup? This is an interesting one. Two teams that we talked about earlier in the show. What are you specifically going to be looking for in this matchup?
I'm going to be looking at simply if the Cowboys can win on the road, because they're 3-3 away, 3-3 away, but they're 7-0 at home. They're going into hostile territory in December in Buffalo with a very soft run game, but so do the Bills. But I'm looking to see if they can go on the road in a big time game in December and win.
Yeah, Alex, I think looking at this game, the Bills being a favorite here, I think is telling. Both teams coming off of big wins. I think, though, that this is a bigger letdown spot for Dallas after getting a huge blowout win over the Eagles. Here's the thing. How many good teams with legit quarterbacks have Dallas beat this year? I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but you mentioned their record, and they're definitely a better home team. It's going to be a tough place to play. The Bills, on the other side, they have life now. And after a close win over Kansas City, they should be the hungrier team, the more desperate team in this spot. I really like the Bills here. They know that if they get this win, they're going to have a real shot at the playoffs. I'm going to take the Bills. I'm going to lay the 2.5, Alex. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Cowboys, and it's probably more because I want the Bills to fail for my own narrative. So I'm going to, but actually, all jokes aside, I'm really going for Cowboys here. I think they're going to be able to go in there, and they're going to be able to neutralize that defensive line, because that's really all the Bills have is that defensive line for the most part. That back end is kind of in shambles, and I think they're going to be able to do some things that a lot of teams haven't been able to do, and I think Dak is playing with a confidence and now probably knowing to try and really solidify and put himself in a firm lead for MVP.
Seahawks, Eagles, this game opened at Philly as a 3-point favorite. It moved to 3.5. It's now at 4. Look, the pros, as far as the betting, they're all over Philly in this one. Now, Seattle moving in the wrong direction. We talked about them earlier. Geno is hurt. Drew Lock is terrible. The Eagles need this win, and they need it bad. After two straight losses, this is a desperate football team right now. They have an extra day of rest. They have to win this one. This is a veteran team. They know how big of a game this has become. Hyper-focused for this game. The media has been blasting them for the last 2 weeks. Eagles, I think, get a blowout win here. I think they cover. I think the Eagles should dominate in the trenches and get back to their identity running the ball, and that's something Seattle struggles with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know they're going to Seattle. Now, Seattle does have a propensity to surprise you when you go into Seattle. And you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to take the Eagles. I had to pause for a moment, America, but I'm going to go ahead and stick with the Eagles, getting back on track, beating Seattle.
How about the Sunday night football game, Alex? Jaguars, Ravens. I think this is an interesting matchup. I'm not completely sure what to make of Trevor Lawrence. He's been dealing with an injury. Baltimore is playing better football right now. The Jags on a bit of a slide here. Lamar Jackson, the Ravens. I think when I look at this matchup, just too much talent. I think both sides of the ball, they have an advantage. I do think the Jags are going to come out swinging. I think that they got to get back in the win column, so they're going to give it everything they got here. I expect a focused effort from them. Historically speaking, Lamar and the Ravens as a favorite on the road is usually a good time to fade this team. So I'm actually going to take the Jaguars to cover, but I'm going to take the Ravens to win. I think it's going to be a really close game and a really good game on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take the Jags here. I think the slide that they've been on and how sloppy they've looked, this is a big game at home, and I think that they're going to be able, and I know this is sort of a quote-unquote homecoming for Lamar because he's playing in Florida, closer to his hometown, close to not too far away from Miami. So this may be a crowd that may be a heavy Raven crowd just based on the quarterback, and we know how the Jacksonville area can be. But I'm going to take the Jags here. I'm going to take the points in the Jags here that they're going to come out and surprise Lamar and the Ravens. And you know what? One quick caveat. You talked about Kayvon Thibodeau. There's going to be something. We're going to have to talk about it later because Trayvon Walker was the number one player taken in this draft. And you talk about Aiden Hutchinson. We talk about Kayvon Thibodeau and a couple other players that we could probably really talk about, you know, at some point in time. But there's going to be something to be said at what happened at the top of that draft and what's happening on the back end of those pass rushers and what is happening, not happening with what they thought they would have in his second year with Trayvon Walker that they're not seeing, because they could surely use a good pass rusher right now.
There is no doubt about it, Alex. There is no doubt. And I didn't love that pick when they made that selection. I thought Walker had a ton of talent, but I thought he was a really raw prospect. And when I looked at Aiden Hutchinson and I looked at Thibodeau, I had both those guys rated ahead of Walker on my draft board. I talked to a whole bunch of really high-level NFL draft analysts on the podcast going into that draft. Not a single one of them said that they would take Walker over Hutchinson or Thibodeau. So that pick has not aged well. Does he have time to develop still? Can he still become a really high-level player? Of course. But, man, when you see the types of early careers that Hutchinson and Thibodeau have put together, it is really not looking good, because Walker has really just not become the guy that they were hoping for.
Brad, a couple other games that I think have a lot of playoff impact. You have the Steelers and the Colts. We know the Colts are right now surging, and the Steelers are kind of falling behind. And the Colts can put themselves in the driver's seat in a playoff position by beating the Steelers and taking them another notch down and putting themselves firmly in the wild card position. Also, you have the Vikings and the Bengals, two teams that are in the playoffs right now. Bengals a fringe playoff team, but they can keep pace if they win. And also, I think a very big game, we talked about the Lions, but the Broncos and the Lions is a huge game for both teams, for Denver to go to try and get to 8-6 and the Lions to stop going to 8-5, where they could be putting themselves in position to be overtaken. If Minnesota does win that game, that would put them a game out of first place.
Last week, Alex, we came crashing back down to earth after being on a hot streak. You took the Raiders -3. And a prop bet on Josh Jacobs over 100 yards rushing. Now, we both took the Kansas City Chiefs -2.5. And you also had the prop bet of Rashee Rice over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. Alex, let's get back on track this week. Who's your lock of the week?
A point I saw this past weekend, it actually came from Adam Schefter. If you include Monday night's games of the Giants and Titans victories, 8 underdogs won week 14, and that's the most in any NFL week this season. And with that being said, I am going to take the 13.5 points in the Arizona Cardinals to beat the 49ers. Since Kyler Murray has returned, they have been in every single game, Rams game aside, since Kyler Murray has returned the last 4 games. So I'm going to take, that's a lot of points, 13.5 points. I'm going to take them against San Francisco.
Alex, I'm going to take the Bears +3.5 versus the Browns. Now, this is a key number, getting that 3.5 over a field goal. Browns' strength, we know, is running the football. This is a team that's going to lean on the run. And if you look at the Bears' rush defense, they've been really good, especially since that move to get Sweat. I also like what I've seen from Justin Fields. I think his ability to maneuver and his ability to run and get away from this really good Browns pass rush, I think it's going to give them some opportunities to take some shots downfield in this game. Browns coming off off of a big emotional win, playing with Joe Flacco. Look, I know he got the game ball and tip of the cap to him coming in here, but a guy like that doing it 2 weeks in a row, I'm going to bet against it. Give me the Bears plus 3.5.
Hey, Brad, before we run, I want everybody to take a real good look at the Cincinnati Bengals. I want you to take a long, strong look at their record. I want you to take a long, strong look at the last four games that they have to play. And I want to know, do you think this team can get to 10 wins? Right now, Jake Browning is 2-1. He's completing 76% of his passes for 924 yards, 5 TDs, and 2 interceptions. The team is running better. That he's figuring out his flow. I believe that Zach Taylor is coaching his butt off. But I want you to look at those next 4 games and tell me what you see, and can they get to 10 wins? They face the Vikings at Pittsburgh, at Kansas City, and they end at home in Cleveland. Because this 10 wins get this team into the playoffs. They're on the cusp. They have a shot. Let's see and let's watch and see.
It's a pretty favorable schedule. And I think you pointed out that Saturday game against the Vikings. I think that is going to be a huge game to kind of determine that. But yeah, those are all very winnable games. The Steelers are right now, they're headed in the wrong direction. The Browns are good, but they're a beatable team. Fascinating, fascinating question, Alex. No doubt about it. And a team that's going to be really interesting to watch. And if they get in the playoffs, circle Zach Taylor for Coach of the Year, because he's a guy that I don't know if we've mentioned as a potential candidate, but what a job he's done after losing Burrow and keeping this team afloat and keeping them in the playoff mix in the AFC. No doubt about it. Guys, if you enjoy the podcast, do us a favor, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Once again, I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.